Good to be with you for the second town hall. We had our first town hall about 3 months ago as some of the plans and decisions were coming together. Thought it'd be good to get together and talk about things a little closer into the semester now, in a somewhat more operational way. So thanks for being with us. We are also planning to record this so that others that have other commitments can watch it at a later point. And so I wanted to let you know that at the outset. So thanks for being here. In terms of where we're going to be headed in the town hall, we've got quite a few questions that were submitted by CAS faculty and staff. I'm also doing a couple of town halls tomorrow with students, one for incoming students and one for continuing students, in addition to this faculty staff town hall today. And the three types of questions we'll work through before going into questions that you all put on the chat. Number one, general questions. Number two, we'll be joined by Pamela Stokes from the OSU Health Office to talk about some of the health-related questions. Those are some of the most frequent questions that we've received related to health. And lastly, kind of a catch-all category, other specific questions. So we'll work through those three areas of questions before going to questions from the chat. Thanks for submitting questions in advance of the town hall. I guess I've already hit on that. We're going to work through the submitted questions first, and then we'll move on to questions that you all might pose in the chat during the town hall. And Associate Dean Dr. Rebecca Brennan will help me in calling through and finding those questions that we're not touching on in the town hall. Okay. So first, a general questions. A question that we've received quite a bit, and we received several questions yesterday from folks, basically paraphrasing here, what has CAS done to assure the protection of faculty and staff? We've been working on this all summer long. These aren't new things to you, I'm sure. There have been a variety of communications we've all received from the university. Some weeks, too many to keep straight. We wanted to err on the side of including as much information as possible over the course of the summer. And so in terms of the six areas that we focused on to protect faculty and staff, number one, obviously social distancing, setting up the campus, both in terms of classrooms, labs, office spaces, the flow of traffic in and out of buildings, up and down stairways to create social distancing. That's been a big priority. The health professionals have emphasized that from the start. Number two, creating larger spaces for classes. You all have heard, no doubt, from Dr. Amy Martindale, our assistant dean for student academic services, on many occasions as we've moved your classes to bigger and bigger spaces to fit the class in there with social distancing. And so moving classes to larger spaces is another way we're protecting faculty and staff and students. We've had an alternate process, a follow-up process to the central OEO process within CAS, through which CAS faculty could submit classes for alternate method. We added that. We've been working all summer on the PPE requirements, and really a lot of credit goes to Dr. Kristen Baum and her staff, interacting with the department heads, program directors around the college to get you equipped with what you needed there. Dr. Baum in the last section, the other specific questions, we'll say a few things about building cleaning that'll be occurring during the course of the semester. And lastly, the directionality signage that people are slowly getting used to, the flow of traffic in and out of buildings, up and down stairwells, stairways. They've instituted a pretty impressive signage system on campus. And then also within the classrooms, and again, a lot of credit to Dr. Kristen Baum and her staff, setting up the classrooms to have social distancing, including in the permanent seating classrooms, cording off seats in which students could not sit with the plastic tanks. And so it's been a lot of work there to create an environment that will be safe in terms of in social distancing and people in masks. So those are some of the things we've been working on to keep you all safe. Wanted to also this category of general questions to bring in now Dr. Tom Weichel. So if we could unmute Dr. Weichel to talk a bit about classroom technology. We had a smorgasbord of questions about classroom technology, and Tom was going to comment on those. Tom, are you able to talk?
Yeah, I'm turning my video on here. Yeah, so earlier this summer, we did a town hall that was really focused on technology. We had Jeff Huber from ITLE join us, and Jeff was very informative. He provided us with a status report on what's going on in general university classrooms. And as most of you know, we've sort of brought online a lot of auxiliary spaces across campus to use as classrooms. And these are typically larger rooms that have been outfitted with desks and tables for social distancing, and also audiovisual equipment. And we mentioned at this town hall that for the bigger classrooms, those holding more than 30 students, we've set them up with, or I should say ITLE, has set them up with huddle cams, which is a form of webcam that provides, has a microphone and a camera. In addition, there's also a visualizer in each of these classrooms. And in the really big ones, there's sound reinforcement equipment that would include a wireless mic. So that's for the bigger classrooms, including existing general university classrooms that we've used and had smaller capacities of students, and then also for those auxiliary spaces. The smaller classrooms of 30 and smaller, we've set those up, or I should say ITLE has set those up with what's called an OWL system, which is it looks a little bit like the Alexa, if you have a home system for Alexa. And it has a 360-degree camera and microphone that is able to pick up conversations from students inside your classroom. This is all set up to be used with either Microsoft Teams for streaming and recording class meetings, or Big Blue Button, which is part of Canvas. It can also be used with Zoom, although we're not really recommending Zoom for this type of thing because of the time it takes to compile the video when you're done with the class session. But Big Blue Button is really what I would probably recommend for faculty to record their class meetings. So those are the basic things that you'd find in a general university classroom. We also have been supporting, as many of you know, departments with purchases of equipment to use in departmentally controlled studios, laboratories, and other facilities that are not general university classrooms. And what we've tried to encourage departments to do is to use that same equipment that we're using in the GU classrooms. In a few cases, some things are back ordered, so we're looking into some temporary solutions for webcams where departments have ordered OWL systems and things like that. But I think that program has been pretty successful. We've distributed more than $300,000 in technology for departments to be ready to go for next week. So those are just some of the things we're doing. I know there were a couple of questions about training. ITLE has some videos. If you go to the ITLE webpage, and I'm looking at it right now, it's itle.okstate.edu/teach-online.html. So that's the URL to get you into their teaching online page. And they have a number of videos set up that will help you and introduce you to Canvas for recording lectures, and also some things about streaming video. So I encourage you to look at some of those online resources for training. There's also a question about, you know, if you have something that you need during a class session, is there someone you can go to? The CASTS staff are going to be helping with departmentally controlled studios, laboratories, computer classrooms, and places that are controlled by or operated by the college. If you're in a general university classroom, there is a card at each instructor station that has a telephone number in order for you to get help. So I would encourage you, I know some of you probably have had a hard time getting into your classroom, but I know on Friday, I believe every classroom is going to be open. So that'll be a chance for faculty and instructors to go and see what's available and sort of get a feel for the equipment. But if you need help during during a class session, that would be your first line, would be to call that number to get help. Do you want me to answer questions now, Glenn, or do you want to hold off until a little bit later?
Sorry, I was muted. You can feel free to hit on any of these specifics you'd like to, Tom.
Oh, you want me to answer questions now, or do you want me to do questions a little bit later?
Oh, I see, the open-ended questions, we'll do those later, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about these sub-bullets here,
I can touch on those. I think I've touched on the first one. Do classrooms and labs have, document cameras. Yes, they have document cameras, and in each general university classroom. And then I think the second point I spoke about, are we going to have a short instruction on how to connect the cameras to conferences in Canvas? Again, I would recommend looking at ITLE resources for that. And then I think I've touched on this third question about faculty needing help and where to go. And again, that's using that telephone number that would be on the card in every general university classroom.
Deal. All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Tom Weichel, our Associate Dean for Instruction and Academic Programs. Next bullet, you will have the opportunity to ask questions through the chat on any of these topics after we get through these pre-submitted questions. Next question, I'd like Dr. Amy Martindale, our Assistant Dean for Student Academic Services, to say a few words about. Several folks have been asking, what are the incoming students saying about all of this? What is student sentiment right now, especially of new students coming to campus? What's on their minds? Dr. Martindale?
Hey, sure. Glad to visit. We enrolled about 1,100 freshmen into the College of Arts and Sciences this summer, and they are by and large really excited to come. They're hoping that the semester gets to happen. We heard that expressed an awful lot of times. And thinking about what their experiences have been, right? They just graduated from high school. They didn't get to finish their senior year. They didn't get to have their prom. They didn't get to have their graduation. They didn't get to say goodbye to their friends and their favorite teachers. So they are just really looking forward to coming. And perhaps, as there's usually a senioritis of students ready to get out of the house and flee the nest. And sometimes the parents are equally happy to have their 18-year-olds flee the nest. It may be amplified this year because they've been at home quarantined with each other since March. So these students are really excited. Normally freshmen are excited to come to college. You look forward to going to college your whole life and it's finally here. And so I think just even more so this year, they are even more excited to come. They're looking forward to that college experience. Our returning students, what we're hearing is that they are also really looking forward to being here. They didn't get to finish the spring semester like they had hoped. They really have that affinity for Stillwater that's always true, and they're really looking forward to being back and looking for that usual OSU look, feel, and connection.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Martindale. It was great to see so many faculty asking what the students are thinking, and probably would try and capture that a bit for you. It'll be interesting to see what students say tomorrow at the town halls we're going to hold for them, students and families, on that matter. All right, next we're going to move on to health-related questions, and we're privileged today to have Pamela Stokes, who is Associate Director of Clinical Operations for the University Health Services. We have quite a few questions. This was the largest category of question by far that we received in advance of this town hall. And so so nice of her to be with us to address some of these questions. So I'll go ahead and work through these and ask them, and we can have Pamela comment on each one. Pamela, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you very much for being here. So the first question is, can professors teach with only a face shield and no masks?
That's a great one. So I know that things were unclear for a while. We kind of went back and forth on this. Because the end all be all answer originally from the CDC was that face shields don't replace a mask, right? But we have moved forward with a document. I think it's going to be released to the faculty. If it has not already, I apologize, because I don't know that. But it has some guidance on there for you. We feel that it's really important that you can, you know, express yourself and that students can see you. Students who need to see you talking can see that. So as long as social distancing is taking place, so there's an adequate distance of at least greater than 6 feet between you and the student, we will allow face shields when teaching. Now, if you start working in groups or you get closer to the students, then of course we ask that you have your mask available so you can put that back on, but it is okay to wear a face shield while you're teaching.
All right, thank you. Next question, the CDC guidelines state masks with vents should not be worn because wearing the mask can still spread the virus. Has or will OSU address this issue as well?
You know, that's a great question. And that's something that as people are buying their masks, didn't think about initially because it's so hard to get them. Even at the health clinic, I had to do some education with that. So I appreciate that feedback because that's the first time that I've heard it brought up amongst the staff who were non-medical people. So I think that it's something that can be easily added to our FAQs. I think it's something that on the safety side of things with environmental health, Kim Southworth and I work closely together, and I will make sure that that's addressed because it does need to be. So some education needs to happen.
All right. And then a variety of questions related to what if. So what happens after someone tests positive? Quarantine procedures, how long will a test result take? Will we be notified if a student in our class is positive? These sorts of things. Would you mind walking us through that process a bit?
Absolutely. So I am going to kind of speak to the current state of things, but also throw in some what ifs as if we were to get busy, just preparing for the future. So right now, if we have a positive, what happens is it pings a state database. That database is controlled by the state health department, obviously, so the counties utilize that. But I have been given access of it just so I can act as a liaison between OSU and Payne County. So if somebody's testing on campus with University Health Services, I'm going to find out before the database even knows if someone is positive. If someone goes to an urgent care or a primary care clinic or somewhere like that, I may not know first that that positive result is dumped into the database, and then we will get those pings and we'll be aware of who's positive. So the first steps are kind of notifying the positive individual, right? So the first thing we want to do is track down that person who tested positive. We're going to try to call you several times first. If some time passes and we don't like how much time has passed, so let's say we try all evening and then the next day we know you're going to get ready for work, we know the student's going to get ready and go to class. We do have some Payne County Health Department employees who are great and they're partnering with us, and they have been known to knock on doors if we can't get a hold of people. So the first thing we're going to do is talk with the positive individual. We'll give them their instructions that they should stay home, how long they should stay home, symptoms to watch for, things like that. And then at that point in time, we're going to ask them to start thinking about where they've been and who they've been in contact with. Ideally, we hope that during that conversation, we get the entire list of people that they've been around. Sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes they give us locations that they were at, but maybe they don't know who was there. If it gets into something like that, then that's kind of where I try to help as much as I can, looking at classes. That's where your class rosters will come into play. That's when we have this, you know, Wi-Fi login information that we can look at if we need to. So the contact tracing piece will begin at the time that we call the individual. Okay. With that said, a lot of people ask me the question, okay, so if somebody's positive in my class, am I going to find out about it? I don't think there's a black and white answer. If someone were to ask me yes or no, the short answer is no. They're part of the story. So what I like to tell people is that if I'm doing a good job in contact tracing, what's going to happen, we are going to contact some people who are kind of a supervisor or the authority in the situation to get their perspective. So I don't like to tell staff, absolutely, you're going to be notified, because if that student wasn't in class for that day, we might not notify you. If that student was isolated in a mask outside somewhere away from everybody,
we may not notify you. But if they were sitting in a classroom, 90% of me wants to tell you that we're going to give you a call and we're going to say, hey, can I talk to you about your seating chart? Can I talk to you about what happened that day? What was your perception of this student? Did they have a mask on? Did they stay quiet? Did you do any group activities? So on and so forth. So there's no black and white answer as will you be notified or not. It's really a process. I spoke with Kelly Rader. She's the director of Payne County. She also said the same thing. Basically, we're going to work with whoever we need to work with to make sure that we have the full story. And if the student can't tell us the full story, then yes, we're probably going to contact faculty. But if we have a pretty clear picture, we may not. So that's kind of the short end of the contact tracing. Okay, from there, we're going to call all the contacts one at a time. Same thing, if we can't get a hold of them, we're going to knock on their door. We're going to give them instructions as far as who needs to isolate, when and where and all that things like that. And then we're going to follow them throughout their journey and give them that release date and make sure that they're not sick, make sure they don't have symptoms, and then we'll release them to the public. I will say, just so you guys understand, right now it's very manageable. If for some reason it balloons and we have a ton of cases, the National Guard has been brought in to help. Also, they've hired 30 extra nurses to help us with contact tracing. So while I'm the liaison and kind of the go-between, I won't be doing all of the contact tracing myself. So I just want to be transparent with that as we move forward. If numbers increase, we'll have lots and lots of help. Did I cover all that?
You did. Yeah, we've got more, and I see the chat light is lighting up. So we may have some follow ups for you.
We've got some
questions here even before we get to the chat, though.
Yeah.
The question of what has to happen before we shut down the campus? Is there a protocol, a threshold that the university has in mind? And then data sharing, to the extent to which we have cases on campus, will there be a data clearinghouse yes. process, and will the public or students, faculty and staff, families be allowed to know sort of the count of cases on the OSU campus?
Those are great questions. I appreciate the feedback we've gotten from faculty and staff on data sharing. So we're in the process of working on that because we think that we need to be transparent. We need everyone to be well-informed. There's a large picture. So what I mean by that is we're going to try to put together kind of a weekly snapshot, if you will, not necessarily a dashboard like you see in some areas, some metropolitan areas, but a weekly snapshot. So for example, what I know that I can give you without a doubt is how many tests were done at UHS for the week, how many positives we had, the percent of positives that we have. So we're going to look at doing like a press release on a weekly basis. We're still trying to figure out where that's going to live, whether it's going to be like a web page in itself or whether it's going to be like a news email. But because of your feedback, and I appreciate that, we have taken that and decided that we need to provide you with some information so that you can be well-informed and well-aware. So we're going to start that this week. We're going to incorporate some Payne County stuff too. So some Payne County numbers, some Stillwater numbers, some UHS numbers, but we're going to give what we feel comfortable giving. So for example, I don't know if you went to test at urgent care yesterday until I get a ping from the state database. So we know UHS numbers, so we're going to try to release those. And we're going to work with Payne County to see if we can find a better way of everyone who tests off campus. So that's what we're working on with the data thing. I think you will see something probably Friday, if not Monday, on everything that went on this week with mass testing. We're going to do a press release and kind of a snapshot of the state of the state. Let's see. What was the first question? I think I missed the first one. The threshold.
Threshold.
Yes. So we talked about this with the director of Payne County Health Department and also with the CEO of Stillwater Medical Center and the mayor. And again, I hate that I can't give black and white answers, but here's kind of what we came to a conclusion of. Stillwater Medical Center is a regional medical center, kind of takes care of all the surrounding towns here. So it's not an end-all be-all because we ask Kelly Rader from Payne County, what was her threshold for a state of emergency in Stillwater? It's not an end-all be-all. So we're going to look at a lot of things. We're going to look at is anybody in Stillwater Medical Center that's been diagnosed with COVID? How is the hospital doing? Are the schools shut down? Are our kids still in school? Have we seen pockets of outbreak on campus? And what I mean by that is, do we have a lot of people that who live in IBA that are coming over and they're all testing positive? Are we seeing a large population of faculty members that are testing positive, but students are doing okay? So we're probably going to have a pandemic team meeting on a weekly basis and include Payne County Health Department in the decision making. So at this point in time, we haven't set a number or a scale. I've seen Stillwater High School or Stillwater Public Schools do that. We haven't necessarily done that, but I will say that Oklahoma State tends to be more conservative. We tend to be the people who take those safe choices first. And so we are going to involve all the community partners in that decision and kind of make it as a board, I guess you would say.
All right, thank you. And then I think since the chat line has been lighting up so much, I think I'm going to save these other specific questions for later. Yeah. I'll come back to these. And let's go ahead, Rebecca, if it's okay, and pull out a few questions for Pamela on the health topic.
We'll go with that. And Pamela, I just wanted to let you know that your mic was kind of a little bit wonky, and so some of your comments were not entirely heard. So there was a comment you made about the National Guard, but it wasn't really clear under what circumstances the National Guard would be appearing on campus.
Okay. So, yes, I apologize for that. Please jump in if I'm cutting out. I'm not sure what's happening. The National Guard I spoke with in regards to contact tracing. So they're already working for us. I say us.
Sorry.
Can you hear me? I feel like I'm cutting again.
Yeah, you did cut out again. So.
Okay, so they're already working for us. They are. I feel like I'm losing signal, guys. They're in Oklahoma City right now, and they are already doing contact tracing. So they have already been hired by Payne County, and they are doing contact tracing for us right now as we speak, because we're already a little stretched thin, and we continue to add to the National Guard staff as we increase in numbers.
Sure. So a couple of questions that come up about face masks and face shields. My understanding from what you said earlier is that masks for instructors are preferred in the classroom.
Yes.
And yeah. So we're encouraging, well, you have to wear some kind of face covering while you are teaching. Masks are preferred, but if you feel that keeping that ability to see your whole face is important for instruction, we're allowing that at this time. Is that correct?
Yes.
We'll wait for that at this time. I'm not sure if you could speak directly to that.
Sure. I can. So as you guys probably know, we're doing mass testing this week. So through Friday, the clinic itself is closed except for emergencies and workers' comp and things like that. As of Monday, that opens up again. And so we can do scheduling for faculty, staff, and students through our online portal, or you can call us at 7665 and make an appointment. Right now, there's not going to be any wait after the mass testing, because those appointments are going to open up probably this weekend for next week. What I will tell you is that when we got busy right before students come back, we were scheduling within about 48 hours. Most places you have to wait 4 or 5 days for an appointment. So we feel that we will increase our number of tests to try to keep that wait at 48 hours. We don't want you to sit at home for a week waiting for a test. So if that means that we have to increase past the capacity that we're at right now, we're going to do that and try to keep that wait at that number.
Right. And my understanding is there is no kind of, you don't have to be showing symptoms in order to make that appointment. You can just be tested.
Right, absolutely. Because we do know that there are lots of asymptomatic carriers. If you have an exposure with another individual, you want to get tested and make sure that you're not positive. So yes, we will take you. I will just throw this out there, though. We highly encourage people to not necessarily test on a weekly basis. We have some people who are trying to test on a weekly basis. It does take 4 or 5 days for those symptoms to appear or for someone to convert to positive. And so if you have a reason to test, even if you don't have symptoms, please come on and see us. But we encourage you to do so every so often or if there's a need to.
Mm-hmm. There was a question about how many cases we have on campus right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We are looking at those and we're going to release those, I think, on Friday. What I will tell you is that the mass tests come in every day about 4 or 5 p.m. and then we process the 900 that we did that day. We're going to do about 6,000 tests in total. I will tell you that the exact numbers are going to come out on Friday. As of right now, I'm pleasantly surprised. And I'm just elated with where we're standing because we are setting at less than 1% right now of those that we have tested. So we'll release the exact numbers on Friday.
Good, that's encouraging. So in terms of the testing that's being reported for Stillwater, are those Stillwater, are OSU students, are they being counted towards that Stillwater number, or are they being counted towards their home communities?
Yes, they will be counted towards the Stillwater number. Now, there's been lots of speculation and questions with that. In the past, even in the summer when we were testing people, if they were to put a home address, it was pinging the county that they came from. We figured right. that out. And so before mass testing, we entered everybody as Payne County and Stillwater, Oklahoma. So if you're testing with University Health Services, you are going to pop up in Payne County and Stillwater, Oklahoma's database. Mm-hmm. If you go somewhere else to be tested, it may be sent to your home address.
Sure. And Pamela, you were, your mic was a little going in and out a little bit when you were talking about what would happen with the student in the class. So I'm teaching a face-to-face class this fall, and maybe okay. one of my students tests positive. So what again is that? Is that protocol for talking to the faculty?
Sure. So what I was saying is that there's no black and white answer. Like, I'm not going to notify 100% of the faculty every single time. But if I can't paint a clear picture, then I'm probably going to call the faculty member. So what that means is, you know, if I call the student and they say, well, I was in a face-to-face class and there was, I don't know, 40 or 50 people in there and I don't know who they are, or they tell me that they were in a large classroom, or they tell me they were in a common class, like an arts and sciences class that everybody has. If they can't give me a lot of details about the people that were in that classroom, then most likely you're going to get a call. And so unless you're like a graduate class and you've only got like 5 people in the class, most likely we're going to involve staff because we have to make sure that we're painting an accurate picture of contacts. And so I can't say 100% of the time that we're going to call you every single time, but what I can say is if I can't paint that picture, if that student didn't know everybody in the class, then I'm going to call you to help me with those names. Mm-hmm.
And there's also been some concern about outside the class. So I'm not exactly sure what sort of messaging that we're doing from a health point of view about best practices with our students. So they have to wear masks when they come inside, but frequently it gets very busy, for example, outside of the student union. Are we expecting them to wear masks in those circumstances as well?
Yes, we are. And we're trying to push out a lot of education and social media on that because we do feel like we can enforce it. There's a Stillwater mask mandate now that supports us in that. And so we do know that if there's a problem with a faculty or a staff member not wearing a mask, that we can go through human resources. If there's a problem with a student not wearing a mask, we can go through student conduct. But also the police department are prepared to help us. If we don't know how to have that conversation and there's a large group of people, you know, gathering at the union at one of the outdoor tables and they're not distancing, we can lean on our police department to help us out and at least have a conversation that we don't want those large crowds and we don't want you walking around without a mask.
Yeah. I mean, just to revisit the point about the positive student in the classroom, there is a lot of faculty concern about that. I mean, they very much yeah. want to be notified if a student in their class is positive. And I know that health information is protected, but it's also, of course, you know, a public health issue. So.
Absolutely. And I took that to Payne County because I wanted to ask the question of, you know, let's say that there are 30 people in a class, everybody wore a mask, nobody took the mask off, everybody's socially distanced. Would we contact all of those people? The answer that I got from the director of Payne County was no, most likely we wouldn't because everybody's doing what they need to do. But what I found just through personal experience is that I just don't feel good going to sleep at night unless I'm talking with another person to make sure that that student story is accurate. And so that's why I hate to promise that you're going to get a Payne County call because you may not, but most likely you're going to get a call from me so I can paint the accurate picture. I understand your concerns.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. We also had some questions about faculty not wearing masks apparently in someone's building. And we, I do believe that we have released some guidance on handling faculty and staff who are not complying with the policy.
And human resources has been great. You can just call their main switchboard and they always find somebody you can talk to help you out with that.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a question here about cleaning. I don't think that would be under your purview in particular, but I do know that we have increased cleaning protocols throughout the university and changed filters. Certainly Kristen Baum could speak to that more directly since she's been overseeing that heroic endeavor. So I think I've gotten through a good portion of them at this point.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate it. And we do have on the other specific questions slide a question about building cleaning processes, and we're going to have Dr. Baum comment at that point. So maybe I'll go ahead and go over to that slide. And there's the question. What cleaning measures are being taken to make our CAS facilities safe? Dr. Baum, are you with us? Now, Dr. Baum didn't have a dissertation defense today.
No, I'm here. I just was not allowed to unmute myself, so I had
to.
I was blocked. So we will have nightly cleaning of facilities, I think Sunday through Friday evenings. And we had sent out a list to department heads to confirm, you know, which rooms were being used for classes. And so they're using, I guess, vital oxide and I guess, broadly spraying down each room. They've got a system in place. And so they will be doing all classrooms that have been included on that list. So all of our standard classrooms. A couple other topics that might be of interest. We have added a lot of hand sanitizer stations in CAS buildings. Just within the college, we added 103. So we've got, at a minimum, one station on every floor of CAS buildings. If we've got clusters of classrooms or areas where we're expecting there to be more activity, we added more. The hand sanitizer stations that FM is adding, they're adding, I think, 106 across campus. So I think maybe we're getting 20 some of those. So we do have some more that should show up on first floors of some buildings. So you might know, like Life Sciences East, we've still only got one, but there's supposed to be two more being added. So that is happening as well. And I haven't walked around, well, I have walked around campus delivering supplies, but I haven't looked to see if the temperature monitoring kiosks are here, but they've got 10 locations where those are supposed to be available, you know, focusing on high traffic student areas so that they've got a location to take their temperature. There's a few disinfecting wipe stations, but not a huge quantity, but you may have noticed those in some different locations as well. They've also changed out the filters. So I guess we've got MERV 13 filters now in all of our buildings on the central part of campus. So that should help with the HVAC system and filtration as well. They're running the system, I guess, longer in the morning and the evening to help with turnover and that filtration as well.
Great, thank you, Dr. Baum. Appreciate that. Next specific question. A faculty member asked, for spring 2020, faculty had the option to exclude student evaluations from their A&Ds and their RPTs processes. What will be the procedure for fall 2020? I actually sent that one to Provost Sandifer, and because that question was asked, we're going to discuss it on Thursday at Dean's Council and just take stock, you know, how has 2020 changed things and how might we approach those processes differently? So that, look for more feedback on that question in the coming days. Thanks for asking that one. During a town hall last spring, OSU was discussing options to reduce the number of students in campus housing for the fall semester to, you know, lessen the effects of disease spread, perhaps having separate rooms and bathrooms. And with COVID-19 worse now than it was last spring, why did the university decide to fill the dorms to a 95% occupancy? I sent that question to Vice President for Student Affairs, Doug Hallenbeck, as well as to Director of Housing, Leon McClinton. They both wrote back. Vice President Hallenbeck said the halls are not at 95% at this time. Leon later confirmed they're at 91%. What Dr. Hallenbeck said was we would have displaced about 1,500 or so upperclass students had we kept at the lower number. Those students would have moved off campus with no controls and most likely with roommates sharing a bathroom. And so we can also test those living on campus, which we are doing now, and that will allow us to identify positives and quarantine them before they can spread the virus. We also have staff that will enforce our mask policy in public spaces in the dorms in a way they don't have in the private options in Stillwater. While on the surface that sounds good, it would have protected the community better than what we are doing. And Leon McClinton said, we're expecting to have 5,182 undergraduate students live with us. That's just under 91% capacity. He said, we've designated 100 apartments in family and graduate student housing for isolation purposes. And we have also finalized an agreement with our local hotel to use as overflow isolation as well. So that is the answer back from Student Affairs. Basically, that it would have been much worse if we had pushed those students off campus, that we can keep a better eye on things here on campus. Next question. I would like to ask if there will be any change to the travel ban currently in place. I'm on leave this semester and still I'm looking at the possibility of doing research abroad in November or December. I did ask the provost about that as well, and he reminded me that we do have the discretion at the college level through the provost office and VPR to do rare exceptions if there's a compelling case to be made that it's absolutely essential to have that travel. Okay, we don't want to promise the world here that everybody would be able to do this, but it sounds like this faculty member might be on a sabbatical, so I would go ahead and submit that, and we'll take a look at that. Okay. And then last question, very specific here about academic advisors. Since it would be safer for the community if we minimize the number of people on campus, why are academic advisors being told to work from their offices with their doors closed when we could easily continue virtual advising from home? And on this, I would encourage, I assume this is an advisor from one of the academic departments rather than a central cast advisor here with Dr. Martindale. I would encourage you to talk with your department head or your program director for whom you work. I've communicated to the department heads and program directors that they can have some flexibility in the hours they're open. They can stagger work shifts so people aren't around each other as much. But if this advisor wants to be home full time, to not be in the office at all, that does require that accommodation process, okay? But I would encourage the advisor to talk to the department head and try and work something out. We have communicated from Cass Dean's office to the department head's program directors to use some flexibility, allow some staggering of shifts so that people can be at work some, at home some. But at the end of the day, folks need to be able to accomplish their work products, in this case, advisement. And it is the case, I've heard from Dr. Martin and others, that virtual advising has worked quite well this summer, all things considered. So those are the specific questions that we had come in advance. And with that, I would be glad to consider other questions that perhaps came in on the chat. I'm using the wrong mouse. Okay, here we go. Are there any other health-related questions while we have Pamela Stokes with us? Are you seeing other health questions, Rebecca?
Yes. So we've had a number of questions related to student health and, well, student, faculty, and staff health and well-being. Now, some of these, I'll go back a little bit. There was concern about transportation and what kind of safety protocols are being implemented to ensure that, let's say, the big orange bus does not become a transmitter of COVID. And I don't know if Pamela can speak directly to that because she doesn't work directly in transportation, but she's still muted. There we go.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I can. So the pandemic team met to talk about that. We have secured a specific van that can assist with transportation. We've put some plexiglass barriers between the driver and the back seat. We have fit tested certain members of the police force so that they can wear a specific respirator when they're transporting someone, whether it be to another room or to the hospital. So we do have that availability, and the police department works with Residential Life when we're helping those students.
Right. And there continues to be a lot of concern about, you know, faculty desiring to be notified if a student in their class is positive. And they do feel like they have many hats in terms of responsibility, not only to themselves and family members, sure, but also to their students. So again, there's a very, very strong preference, I will say, for being notified if you have a sick student in your class.
Sure, I understand that completely. And I'm one person who shares your concerns, and I'm doing my best to contact those. We haven't started class yet, but for example, you know, when working with Greek Life, I've already been in contact with them, and I understand that you would want someone to call you as well. So I will for sure take the concerns to the pandemic team, mm-hmm, so that if I'm not available, that we've discussed the process and we've heard your concerns.
Great. And so there was a question earlier about the Greek system. So that my understanding is that they're all being tested.
Yes, they are.
Right. All right, let's see. So just circling back as well, when in terms of updates on student numbers, you said that was going to be once a week?
Yeah, I was reading the chat. I see that you guys are concerned about that. For sure, I just wanted to let you guys know that the snapshot will be done by the end of the week. So I don't want to say that it's only going to be done once a week. That's what we initially discussed. And I think that probably the reason that we did that is because the numbers are so low right now that we felt like at the end of mass testing that we could do a press release and release kind of the state of the state for everybody. I think that you're right. If numbers are increasing, that maybe we need to do a more frequent snapshot. So mm-hmm, I'll take that back to my pandemic team as well.
Okay, great. And there was another question from a bit earlier about best practices for group work in a face-to-face class. So if you're working in a group of students, we still have to maintain that 6 foot, or is it expected that at some points we won't be able to do that if we're doing some kind of hands-on project?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Listen, I've talked with some classes who are moving forward with the group work anyway, and they're just making sure that people are educated and they know to wash their hands frequently, not touch their face, wear their mask. Let's be honest, you know, if both parties are wearing a mask, then the chances of contracting the virus are less than 3%. But that doesn't mean they're zero, right? There's always a chance. I do think that it's very unlikely if both people are wearing their mask that it could happen, but it could happen because we're talking about aerosolization, right, of the virus into the air, sneezes and coughs and things like that. So if you could, Of course, I'm always going to tell you to put 6 feet or more. And 6 feet is just a number. You know, that's a number that researchers have looked at and that they feel is better than sitting right next to somebody. So there's lots of what ifs. And I know that we're all thinking that and we're all concerned about that. But yeah, if I had to say ideally, and you want to do group work, could you stay spread out? Yes. But if everybody has a mask on, are we less concerned as healthcare providers? Absolutely.
Thank you. And there was one more question about students. So our understanding is that so students in the Greek system and students who are living in campus dorms are all being tested, but students who are living off campus are not. But they do have the option of being tested, right?
Absolutely, yes. And so we are encouraging Payne County to have a weekly tent to do thousands of tests. Once we're done with mass testing, we're opening back up so that any student who wants to be tested can get tested. We're going to encourage it. We're going to do marketing campaigns towards it. We've tested all Greeks, everybody living on campus. And then what we plan on moving forward, the state health department has recommended that we test at least 2% of the population on a monthly basis. That is the benchmark that they gave us to meet. I will tell you that the number of tests that we're doing per week exceed that 2%. So we're going to test as many people as we possibly can. We started off in the summer doing 100 tests a day. We are ready to amp it up to 400 a day.
Great. And so with respect to actually wearing a mask, I mean, many of our students will have started wearing masks over the summer because the communities they live in require that. But a lot of people wear them improperly. Let's just be honest. I see people with their mask pulled down under their nose. They fiddle with it. They touch it. Are we also providing some additional guidance for the students on proper mask wearing and perhaps the faculty and staff as well?
Absolutely. If you need handouts, reach out to me. I can get you some. I have some different handouts on mask wearing. I have handouts on how to isolate. We're trying our best. We've pushed it through the wellness department and university health. We're pushing it through student affairs. Anybody that wants to help us market that, we'd appreciate it.
Really, really quick on that topic. While we've been meeting, the provost sent us all emails with tons of attachments about these very topics. So that's sitting in our inboxes right now. My understanding is that Chris Barlow will be putting out some sort of handout tomorrow, I believe, that will talk about the mask wearing in particular and the interaction between professor and students when it gets heated. Some really good advice that's going to be coming out in that document tomorrow.
Right. So I think we've covered most of the topics. There was a question about testing students from high COVID areas, such as Texas. But I also recall that in the Cowboys Coming Back document, students were asked to not entirely quarantine, but at least be very careful for the 2 weeks prior to coming back to campus. So we are not... We're encouraging all students to test, but we are not specifically targeting students who may be coming from Texas, for example, where COVID is certainly more occurring at higher rates than here in Oklahoma. Is that correct?
That is correct. We are testing all international students. I didn't mention that, or international travelers. We are looking at that population.
Okay. Thank you. Covered most, yeah.
Dr. Breeden, were there questions? I thought I saw the chat light coming on when Tom Weichel was talking earlier. Were there any of the classroom technology questions back there at the beginning or not so much?
I think people would like the link to the ITLE training that Tom was mentioning earlier. So if we could put that into the chat, that would be helpful. But I think most of the questions, I'd say 95% of the questions have been about health and safety protocols. So I'm very appreciative to have Pamela here to provide insight into that. So we do not want students to wear face shields, I assume. We want them to wear masks. Good. All right. I am not seeing a lot of technology questions here. Okay.
All right. Well, Pamela, is there anything else that you wanted to wrap up on? I think you're muted.
I got muted again. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to say, please don't hesitate to reach out anytime. I try to keep up with my emails and I'd be happy to answer simple questions.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for being with us. It's been extremely, extremely helpful. All right. So if there aren't additional questions, thank you everyone for coming today. And then there's another question, Rebecca? Go ahead, Rebecca.
Yeah, great. I'm unmuted now. Thank you. So there is a question, and we had talked about this earlier today, about faculty members who have been approved by the Office of Equal Opportunity for online teaching, basically for working remotely, whether they can come onto campus and use their research spaces, maybe to record their lectures, to do that kind of work. And Dean Kreutz, if you could speak to that.
Sure, yeah, we're actually getting clarification on that right now. We're working with the Provost Office, OEO, and HR about that. There's one technical answer that might be that no, if you've been accommodated, that you need to stay away. But we would like to figure out a way where folks can get to their materials and still get their work done. So we're trying to work that out. In fact, Dr. Breenan has been shepherding this topic a good part of the day today to find out what might be possible there.
Right, and it may. It may require an adjustment to your accommodation, but that's something that we'll gain greater clarity on shortly. The other question that came up most recently is, what happens if a faculty member is diagnosed with COVID?
Pamela, are you still with us?
Sent her away too soon.
they will be quarantined, asked to stay away. At that point, there are different choices in terms of doing your class, whether remote option, having colleagues help you out. As Pamela mentioned, some of this we have to just do our best and see how it goes, and that would be one of them. But we certainly would want to err on the side of taking a person that's suspected of being infected or infected and get them out of the population, so to speak.
Yes. There was a question, just looping back to safety protocol. I honestly can say that we are not, have not discussed with transportation exactly what their cleaning protocols are on the buses. So cannot speak directly to that. My understanding regarding classroom cleanliness is that it will be cleaned thoroughly, but only once a day. And Kristen probably would be able to speak more directly to that, but it will not be cleaned. Classrooms will not be cleaned after every single class.
That's correct. I can speak to that. Joe Weaver is paying a bunch of extra money for every inch of surface in classrooms to be cleaned once. That's after the building closes at night. That's a big improvement of what's currently done. Classrooms are not clean, haven't in the past been cleaned in that manner. So they'll be cleaned every touchable surface in classrooms every night, but just that once. So that does, it's just not logistically possible to have a full cleaning between classes. And so that does bring, again, to that individual activity and purpose and agency aspect becomes important, where folks want to have wipes with them. They want to be practicing those techniques that we're all advocating in terms of social distancing, and try to take care of that, some of that themselves as they go into the classroom and as they leave. Yeah, just Dr. Baum, anything else to add there? She's muted. Okay.
Okay. And we did just, I think it was last week, all the weeks are blurring together, but drop off some of the 4-ounce bottles of Oki Clean surface disinfectant, that there should be one available for every faculty member, you know, instructor of any type, graduate student, staff. So the idea there was that's something small enough that you can take with you to the classroom, you know, given that there's not going to be disinfection between classes, so that you could, I will say this for Norma, you can dampen your paper towel, you know, spray it, not directly on the keyboard, you know, and then wipe down your keyboard and your lectern and whatever else that you want to wipe down. But that was the intent of those disinfectant sprays, was to try to help with that classroom scenario. And there are departments can purchase Oki Clean to refill those bottles. I think they have that information as well, but we wanted it to be small enough that you could actually carry it with you to class without jugging around, carrying around a large container. So,
and faculty are also encouraged to bring extra disposable masks with them to class to, you know, give to any student that managed to actually get into the building not wearing one. Some of the questions that have come up in the chat, we just can't answer right now. You know, if we move online, that is a question, you know, that's a discussion that we will have to have a bit later. And certainly there are inequities that are built into that, that potential move. And the question about A&Ds and research productivity, if you're not able to get into your lab, again, we'll be providing additional information and guidance on that, but cannot do that immediately.
Very good. Well, thank you, everyone, for being here today, and thank you for sending your excellent questions and for your questions today on the chat. We appreciate everything you're doing, everything, the extra work you've been doing, spring semester and the summer, the things you're taking on this fall semester. We know it's taking extra work. We appreciate everything you're doing for CAS and for OSU. And with that, I will go ahead and wrap up, and hope everybody has a good rest of their day and a good night. See you later.